Lingering, the bye week, which the guys talked about too, could not have come at a better time, is the status of one Ches Malusi. If you saw the game, you saw the injury, there's a reason why they didn't show it again. And again, with a bye week now, and Braylon Allen's been dinged up too. We talked about that last week in the post game because a lot of you out there listening are going, why do we see more of Braylon? We got dinged up in practice leading into the game last week. So that bye week could not come at a better time. Here's the thing to remember, okay? And we'll talk about the penalties and that type of stuff. And I know there's a part of Badger Nation that's going to chime in and go, you know what? You got to clean that stuff up because when you're home against Ohio State, you can't let that happen against Iowa. This team is growing. This program is getting better. A lot of things that we saw that were certainly deficiencies through the first 3 weeks of the season, I thought they got better tonight. I thought the offensive line still had some mistakes. Not going to give them a pass on this, but I thought overall they played better tonight. I thought the play calling from Phil Longo, and now you see why they brought in Tanner Mordecai. Now you see why they brought in the receivers. I mean, C.J. Williams, people have been clamoring for that for a while, and C.J. Williams had, as you said, Nick, a breakthrough game tonight.
He did, and we'll say this. The question was if they could start, and if they could start hot, and it was red hot from the just the rip. I mean, they pulled out the plays that we didn't even know they had. They had that wide receiver reverse pass to Mordecai for 19 yards right away early in this
game.
And
then they pulled it out again just for a special note for the two-point conversion.
I don't know if it was quite the Philly special, but many people were calling it the Philly special. Now we can call it the Philly, as in Phil Longo, special.
Yeah, so, there you go. I like that.
Yeah, we can do that. And it was wonderful, man. It was a half that we all wanted for, 21-3 going into the break is far different from what we've seen.
So here's how you connect with us tonight. 414-799-1973. 414-799-1973. Also, you can hit me up on Twitter at Badger Postgame. I'm not going to try to spell your name, Nick, so you can do that on Twitter, also known as X.
Yeah. Nick, N-I-C-K, Brusewitz, B-R-U. E-S-E-W-I-T-Z.
You know, it's radio. You can change your name anytime you want.
Well, Tim Scott over here.
And we should not forget to mention that you are not related.
I am.
You are related to Mike Brusewitz.
You know what? It
the
boils
former
down
Badger
to this.
Basketball legend.
It's been a while since my father and I have talked about it, but he has told me that we are related to the Mike Brusewitz family, Brusewitz, former Badger. All I say is this, it's a nice icebreaker, and even if I'm not related to him, I'm not going to dig deep enough to find out. I'm just going to use it. I'm going to keep saying it. And he zapped all the physical abilities out of my body and absorbed them into his and became a carrot top legend here in Madison. But I'm here. Brusewitz's name staying in Madison, and I'm going to try and make it bigger and better than Mike.
All right. So it's weird for us. It's a Friday night. But you know what? The Badgers get it done. 38-17 was the final tonight as our Ford postgame show continues. Stations along the network. We need to pause 10 seconds for an ID. 10 seconds for station identification. This is Badger Football from Learfield.
WFHR Wisconsin Rapids 1320 AM and W248DE broadcasting at 97.5 FM.
All right, let's look at some numbers on this game tonight. Of course, the most important number is 38. That's what the Badgers put up. Tanner Mordecai tonight, 17 of 27 through the air, 174, and no touchdown passes. That I'm still trying to figure out the call on the grounding call.
In the
second half of the end zone. That was a little strange to me.
I believe that was a back-to-back penalty for the Badgers. They had gotten the intentional grounding and then a false start, which led to a field goal. So you see that in the Wisconsin, you know, their plays that they scored on, and you say, hey, why do they have a field goal here instead of a touchdown? Well, the questionable through the back of the end zone intentional grounding. I asked you, I said, hey, have you ever seen it where he throws it through the back of the end zone and it's called a grounding? And you said, hey, you know what? There was no receiver there. And
well, it was uncatchable. That's why they called it as they did.
Yeah, but it's just,
you know, we'll stay on the offensive side of the ball tonight. Braylon had 16 totes for 116 and the two touchdowns. Tanner Mordecai in that first half doing it as much with his feet as he did with his arm. 14 for 58 and the two touchdowns. touchdowns. And as you heard Luke talk with Mike Heller a few minutes ago, a lot of that was unscripted. I mean, it's basically the read option. That's what it is. If you see it, take it. And I thought for the first time tonight, this Badger offensive line played, started to figure it out.
Yes.
Did some great, I mean, there was a point in the game tonight where Tausch talked about, it seemed like he had almost 10 seconds to throw the ball. I thought from a pass blocking standpoint, some key third down throws by Tanner tonight. Again, this is why they brought this guy in. I mean, he looks like a six-year senior.
Oh, he killed it today, and yes, he proved why those that considered him a lateral move from the prior quarterback are wrong, in the sense that he has shown that when it collapses, he can remain poised. So tonight we finally got to see what he looks like without a broken play, without the broken pocket, with the ability to actually examine the field and read his options and find the open targets. And he did it to a lot of different wide receivers. It wasn't just a one-guy thing. It was he reached each of his receivers in different ways. C.J. Williams, season high, catches and yards. And you saw DK get involved late in the second half, Pauling with three catches for 26. Bryson Green gets involved. That's four wide receivers and Skylar Bell to catch as well, and even could have had a bigger one if had he not dropped it. But spreading the ball around, staying poised no matter what, and even finding ways to produce in non-traditional quarterback ways, Tanner Mordecai is proving why this extra season not only was valuable to Wisconsin, but for him personally as he tries to boost his draft stock.
It's interesting, too, when you dig into the guts of this game, especially the first half. We talked about the fast start. I mean, the Badgers come out of the chute, 8 plays, 61 yards, 7-0 on the play fake, Mordecai, and the Badgers take that lead. But then it became a flag fest. And I, you know, on the defensive side of the ball, looking through my notes, I thought James Thompson had a great first half.
Yeah, and he had a great particular series that second time Purdue
right,
got the ball.
Right, but he had a great first half.
He was very much involved in the first
but
half.
But he had a great first half.
You're emphasizing exactly yes. What happened. He did the classic Houdini disappearing act in the second half. But we were talking throughout the game. We said they just don't have the guy on the defensive line or the guy at linebacker. How much it impacts the team to lose Herbig and to lose Benton and even Torchio as that safety who played linebacker, kind of a hybrid role. They don't have the guy, and they have seen flashes from a variety of different players, but no one to this point through four games has stepped up and said, hey, I'm the next Badger superstar on that linebacker defensive line front seven.
You know, it's interesting, too. As I said, we dig into the guts of the first half of this game. Wisconsin is up 21-3. They get the ball back. They hold Purdue to a 3-and-out. And the Badgers start a drive on the 25, if I'm looking at my notes right here. You get a false start by Fertney. You get a delay of game call on Mordecai. So now it's a 3rd and 16. Mordecai runs for 12. So now it's a 4th and 4. And you can feel momentum maybe shifting a little bit from Purdue's standpoint. And the last thing you want is to give them some momentum going into the break. And sometimes little things are lost. I mean, what they did from a kicking game tonight, from a field goal standpoint, was special. And how about Bertram at that point? And you have to give Luke Fickell credit, because prior to Bertram ripping off the 60-yarder, Luke calls timeout.
Yeah.
Calls timeout, settles the special teams down, and he rips off a 60-yard punt, so Purdue starts that drive at the 3-yard line, which subsequently led to the Ricardo Holman pick. They end the first half, and the Badgers go in the locker room very happy with a 21-3 lead.
Well, to circle back to that possession, too, there was a false start on Fertney, like you said, and then a 9-yard completion, first down to Will Pauling. So backed up from the penalty, they still get the first down, and at that point, 8 for 8 on third downs in the half. Hadn't failed a third down. And so then you saw a home run ball deep down the right sideline to Skylar Bell. Kind of over-shoulder catch. Not easy. I couldn't do it. I don't think many people could. Doesn't come down with it. Delay of game. Loss of yardage by Malusi on that second down, therefore, afterwards. So you got a 3rd and 16. 3rd and 16. And this is before that punt. So then you see a 12-yard scramble by Mordecai to make it a reasonable punt to at least try and pin them back. And even though they failed the third down, it was a very valuable third down possession, third down attempt, where they put up 12 yards. And then you see Bertram's two punts on the day, and they were both, I mean, pretty solid. That first one, though, eliminates any opportunity for Purdue late in the first half.
I think as you dive into the second half, too, is that when Purdue seemed like they were building momentum, and they scored, and the defense at times, not on the ropes, but the defense, you know, as we've talked about, the talent level that we've been used to the last couple of years just isn't there right now. Eventually, it will get there. But in that second half, you needed the offense to step up, and the offense did, albeit at times not 7 points,
yeah,
but they were 3 points. And the thing that frustrated me a little bit is that if you can play a cleaner game and you can flip some of these threes into sevens, you're blowing this Purdue team out of the water. I don't know if it was, I think it might have been Mike Heller today on the local pregame show in Madison and Milwaukee, when he said that as good as Washington State were at home, Purdue was not to that level. And Wisconsin, you know, again, this is a program, and fans are going to, you're sick of me telling you this. This is a program that's in the midst of change.
Yeah, and so is Purdue, but that Wisconsin showed where they are in their transition versus where Purdue
is. I think part of it is, too, it's just a better program.
Oh, sure.
You know, it's a lot better program, a lot better players, and I thought they did. Again, granted, there's still a lot of warts here. There's a lot of things to be fixed, but I think they took a step forward today. The question is this. How do you replace Ches Malusi if he's out?
Well, I said it when it happened. I mean, as wild as it may sound coming out of my mouth, the back that you can afford to lose just based off of play style is Braylon. And hear me out. He might be the higher NFL prospect. The future is as high as anyone. But he plays somewhat similar to Jackson Aker. And Aker's going to be, you know, a B-level, C-level replacement if Braylon were to go down. But now you got two guys that are kind of the slower, the bigger, the bruising backs. And we're going to have to see who steps into that change of pace Ches Malusi role. Because there's no doubt in my mind that Ches is the faster, more elusive running back in the duo between him and Allen.
Well, I think what you may see, too, and again, the creativity of Phil Longo on display, and Graham Harrell has spent a lot of time in this offense as well. He was a Packer quarterback at one time.
Yeah, backup. You reminded me of that.
Tremendous college football player, but you saw played in a couple of plays tonight where a wide receiver came in and lined up at running back.
Yeah, so Tyrone Tracy.
I mean, you may see some of that
wide receiver,
depending on, you know, the injury situation as well.
Who has switched to running back, and he's who carved the Badgers, and that's it's interesting based off the fact that Purdue greatly had to eliminate the run at least as their primary go offensively based off of going down early 21-3 at half, 14, whatever. You can't run the ball as effectively knowing that you're racing against the clock. And if the Badgers hadn't hopped out to the early lead and Tracy had gotten, you know, a lion's share of touches and had 15, 20 carries today, if they would have gone that route, there's no doubt in my mind he would have carved up the Badgers like he did.
Well, but I think to remember, too, in reference to Ches Malusi's injury, this is not like, what are we going to do now? Unfortunately, this is the same thing that played out in the second half last year.
And Braylon's banged up, as usual.
So I mean, bye week couldn't have come at a better time. Badgers win tonight, 38-17, the final. Love to hear from you. We'll go back to West Lafayette with Mike Heller inside the locker room coming up. Again, touch base with us at 414-799-1973, 414-799-1973. I know this is the Badger football postgame show, but I have to tell you one of the wildest things I have seen in a long time.
You gotta like
was
it.
Was Rowdy Tellez closing out the Marlins tonight as the Brewers clinch a playoff spot, and a list of guys that have closed out historically for the Brewers to clinch a playoff spot. Never, never in a million years would you have thought it was Rowdy Tellez. And again, but this is the Badger Football Postgame Show. Our postgame show presented by your local Wisconsin and UP Ford dealers continues in a moment with the Nick Brusewitz, who, yes, is related closely, well, semi-closely to Mike Brusewitz. Badgers win tonight, 38-17 in the Big Ten opener. A lot more to get to as we continue. This is Badger football from Learfield.
Chop the bin! All Badger football fans 12 years or younger, would you like to win 4 tickets in a VIP experience to a Badger football game this season? Register at shopthepig.com. No purchase necessary. Go Badgers!
Wiggly, wiggly, shop the pig! Relationships. building them.
Making them last a lifetime.
Since 1978, Clary has worked to develop true relationships with you, our customers. Hi, I'm Sean Clary, president of Clary Building Corp. Relationships are what drive our success. So whether you are looking at storage for your toys or a new egg building, we hope to exceed your expectations each time we serve you. We are here for every stage of your life. Build your dreams today at clarybuilding.com.
Whether you're watching the game, cooking your famous burgers, or leaving a light on for loved ones, we know you count on Alliant Energy to deliver the safe, reliable energy you need so you can focus on what's most important to you. Alliant Energy, powering beyond.
From the opening kickoff to the fifth quarter,
the defense comes through again.
This is Badger football from Learfield.
Hey everybody, how we doing? I'm Charlie Behrens, inviting you to join me Saturdays and or Sundays at noon. It's a horse apiece, whatever you decide. We're doing the Cripes Cast, where we talk to people for and or from the Midwest, and it's more fun than a six-pack of Jolly Good. Okay, the pride of Random Lake, that Jolly Good is. Anyway, it's on your Civic Media station and the Civic Media app. And do me a favor, yeah, tell your folks I says hi. Okay, real good.
What I know about courage, I learned from my adoptive mom. She said sometimes you just gotta hold on and know we'll get through this.
Mom, we are so high up. Hold my hand.
No, you hold my hand.
Here we go.
Learn about adopting a teen from foster care. You can't imagine the reward. Visit AdoptUSKids.org to find out more.
I learned patience from my adoptive dad. All he had to say was,
"Hey, you got this. Just breathe." Hey. Hey, we're pretty good.
Yeah.
Might have to start a band.
I got it.
Learn about adopting a teen from foster care. You can't imagine the reward. Visit AdoptUSKids.org to find out more. This message is brought to you by AdoptUSKids, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, and the Ad Council.
Sports allow us to play, learn, and grow. But there's something more important than victory. At the U.S. Center for Safe Sport, we believe every athlete deserves to be safe. Safe from abuse and misconduct on and off the field. We equip athletes, parents, coaches, and others with the right education to recognize, prevent, and respond to harmful behavior. Join the movement to champion respect and end abuse at uscenterforsafesport.org.
I'm Kirsten from Pentatonix. We've all learned how to cope with more time alone. With more time spent isolated or at home, the need for companionship has grown. If you've considered adding a pet to your family, please check with your local shelters and foster organizations. Stray pet numbers have grown immensely over the past several years, and the trauma caused to these animals is devastating. Adopt pets, they need us more than we know. This message is courtesy of the United States Air Force.
Saturdays at 1, don't miss Under the Helmet with the Gravedigger, featuring legendary Gilbert Brown and Earl Ingram. Football, life, and fun.
Earl, you've been driving a Yugo. They just gave you a brand new Ferrari with turbo boost. So enjoy it, brother.
Under the Helmet with the Gravedigger, Gilbert Brown and Earl Ingram. Saturdays at 1 on the Civic Media Network and on the Civic Media app.
And we're live here outside the Perez family home, just waiting for the... And there they go, almost on time this morning. Mom is coming out the front door strong with a double-arm kid carry. Looks like Dad has the bags. Daughter is bringing up the rear. Oh, but the diaper bag wasn't closed. Diapers and toys are everywhere. Ooh, but Mom has just nailed the perfect car seat buckle for the toddler. And now the eldest daughter, who looks to be about 9 or 10, has secured herself in the booster seat. Dad zips the bag closed, and they're off. Ah, but looks like Mom doesn't realize her coffee cup is still on the roof of the car. And there it goes. Oh, that's a shame. That mug was a fam favorite.
Don't sweat the small stuff. Just nail the big stuff. Like making sure your kids are buckled correctly in the right seat for their age and size. Learn more at nhtsa.gov/the right seat.
Visit nhtsa.gov/the right seat.
Brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad Council.
Here's a fun fact for you.
the average chameleon can point their eyes in two different directions. On the other hand, the average human can't. So unless you're a chameleon, there's absolutely no way you can focus on texting and driving at the same time. So don't do it, unless you're a chameleon.
Visit StopTextsStopWrecks.org. A message brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, Project Yellow Light, and the Ad Council.
Oh, what an answer by the Badgers!
The Badgers play here. Tune in to every game for Wisconsin football right here.
Wisconsin Badgers football on WFHR is brought to you by Members Advantage Credit Union, 8th Street Auto, Tri-City Services, and Ameriprise Financial Services, LLC. Listen all season long on 97.5 FM, 1320 AM, WFHR. Streaming live and on the Civic Media app.
Going on. One, the playmakers you were used to, and Nick, you touched on, no Keanu Benton, no Nick Herbig, and others from the defense a year ago. I mean, you don't have a playmaker. You don't have that guy, a T.J. Watt, for example, going back a few years, that comes off the corner like Herbig was last year. You just don't have that, the talent level. And Hunter Wooler is a special player. But special players to become great players have got to have other special players around them. You've got a great bunch of guys that play hard, but defensively up front, they're guys. That's what they are. They're guys that try hard, and they play really up to their ability, I guess. But just what we're used to, it's and again, I don't want to sound like I'm knocking on the guys, because I'm not. It's just that we don't have those special players that we've had and enjoyed the last couple of years. The other thing, too, let's be honest, this is a completely different defensive scheme that they're running now, too. And it takes time to get used to that. So, you know, I thought one of the things that we saw more of tonight, we saw a lot more, especially in the first half, we saw a little bit more pressures than we had before. And I think that's part of, you know, getting comfortable and trusting guys. But, yeah, that second half concerned me a lot. I mean, defensive line did not play well. At times, you wondered where the linebackers were. There's a lot of things on film. And now that with the bye week, they've got plenty of time to work on them. So, Steve, I appreciate your call. I do. Safe travels, okay?
Yeah, thanks for having me.
All right. Let's go back to West Lafayette. Listen in now as head coach Luke Fickell met the media after the win tonight.
We were kind of what we were on third down in the first few drives, but we played really well. You know, I think that they made it a game in that second half. They got some things rolling, and you know, they made some plays down the field, and you know, there's a lot of things we got to do better. But I think that for us to go on the road, our first time, you know, go on the road to this team and winning a ball game, and this was big for us. So we got a bye week coming up, so which is unique. Nothing like winning before you go into a bye week. Playing a Friday night game is unique as well. But I think what I just told those guys in the locker room is, you know, you don't get healthy on a bye week, but you can get your mind right. And for us, we got a lot of things we got to continue to grow in. And we got to use this coming week really, really well in many different ways. Yeah, I don't know exactly what the deal is. I don't know that it looks good, you know, and they're hurting in there. If we lose him for a while, it'll be tough. He's not just a great football player for us. He's not just a great tailback. He's a bit of the heart and soul of some of the things that we do. And, you know, because of all the things he's gone through, you know, all the ups and downs and the injuries, and to have the attitude that he has, he's a big part. If he can't play for a while, he'll still be a really big part of what it is that we do.
I'm not saying it's perfect, but offensively, is that a little bit what you kind of thought it was?
Yeah. I mean, we can nitpick on some things, right? I mean, we gotta score some touchdowns. We don't want to kick as many field goals in the red zone, but that's about the only thing. Not turnovers, but penalties. I think that give them some credit. They drew us offsides probably three or four times tonight. But that's the rhythm, you know. I think when some people ask the questions about what do you guys want to be, and I say we want to be balanced. You know, 195 and 193. I mean, you can't script it any better. And we made some really big throws there in the second half when we had to, and it wasn't like we were just gonna, you know, pound the ball and just run it, because, you know, people today, they cannot allow that to happen, and these guys definitely weren't gonna allow it just to run that thing out in the second half. So we had to continue to execute, and I thought they did a great job.
follow up on Chess. Is he here? He gets picked, go to the hospital right away.
I don't know if he's back yet. I think they ran him over to get some x-rays and things like that. Hopefully he'll be back over there by the time we get back.
What did you just think of Tanner's decision making tonight, especially when he had goal off script or read it again?
No, that's where Tanner, I think, sometimes is best. And, they're two quarterbacks that I think you saw some of their versatility. You know, obviously we're talking about Tanner with ours, but, his ability to make things happen, his ability to, move around, his ability to buy time is really, really big. You know, obviously he had a great big run down there in the red zone for a touchdown on a drop eight situation. But, he's a threat in many different ways. And he ran it probably a few more times than we had all year. Some of them were designed in some ways, a couple option plays, but I think that, from what they were doing defensively, they make it difficult in a lot of things you got to do, and sometimes you got to add the quarterback in there a little bit.
How do you think the offensive line kind of took a step forward today, especially pass protection in the middle of the field, too, by Tanner had a lot of time?
I think he did, and I think that there are some of those situations that are a three-man rush, but in the three-man rush, sometimes it's just about being relentless, right? Sometimes you can relax and let up, but that's what I think they did a great job. They did, when they brought five, they did a really good job on the five. When they brought six, the backs were in there. I think they did a really good job on that. And I think all in all, from where I was standing, I thought the protection was probably one of the best things that we did all night. There's some things we got to do better, but protection was really good.
What went into the decision to get the two back on that last touchdown?
It's the book, to be honest with you. I don't like we're trying to do anything different other than based on what the score is and what it tells you to do. Don't think twice about it. It's not, a negative thing. It's just, hey, based on the score of the game and the time that's left, the book says to go for two. And, sometimes I go against the book. But the way they were moving the football, we had to be smart about what it is we're doing, I thought they did a really good job at moving the ball. We did some good things at making some stops there in the red zone and getting a couple turnovers. But it never felt like, hey, we're in good shape. So we had to kind of go by the book.
You brought in some corners, obviously, in your offseason. I think you mentioned the other day that Palmer played a ton of snaps before they tried to get him a break, but
I think he's doing a really good job. I mean, we got to go back and watch, but he's the one guy that doesn't roll a whole lot over there. I think we roll with Alex in the boundary a little bit more, and we've got to give him some opportunities to roll as well. He came up big tonight. He made some big plays. He obviously had a pick, a really good play. We got to work on his return skills a little bit. I don't know. They said he stepped out of bounds about the 45. I thought maybe we had an opportunity to take that thing a little bit further. But he's been very consistent in everything he's done. One nitpick, I think there's some things out there in the field you got to really tackle well. But I think that's some of the things that make it difficult when you have to play out there all the time.
Were you encouraged by the fast start tonight? Just getting out early, were you encouraged by seeing?
There's no doubt. I mean, the way we started with three touchdowns, really the way we played on third down, I think, in that first three series was what we needed. And like I said, it wasn't something we did different. Last week we hadn't had a turnover, and then all of a sudden we get six, and it wasn't like some magic thing we did. We just continued to push, continue to harp on the things that we got to do and the consistency in which we do them. And I think it starts with protection. I think it starts with the ability to play well on third down, and I think we did that especially well in that first half.
A little bit from Coach Fickle. He's met the media tonight in West Lafayette. If you're just joining us, welcome to the postgame show brought to you by your local Wisconsin and UP Ford dealers. Tim Scott and Nick Brusewitz with us tonight. 38-17, the final. Badgers begin the young Big Ten season 1-0, now 3-1 on the season. But again, this game is overshadowed, as Coach talked about, to the injury to Ches Malusi. Seeing some things on X and Twitter that said immediately after the injury, he was taken to the hospital for x-rays. He is now back with the team and will be flying home with the team tonight. I don't know if that's a good or a bad sign, but if anything, if there's nothing broken, ligaments, that type of stuff, this bye couldn't come at a better time. And he is a key cog to this team offensively, and he does so many things. And the 1-2 balance between he and Braylon Allen, Ches can't go. It is going to be a big blow for this football team. And again, as I said, this bye could not come at a better time. Coach also talked about third down efficiency tonight. The Badgers, 12 of 18 on third downs tonight.
And they were 8 of 9 in the first half. So they got starting
They started hot, and they stuck with it, and they were still hot, and they took that into half. The only one they didn't get was on a 3rd and 16 that Tanner Mordecai ran for 12 yards, made it a 4th and 4, and a beautiful punt off of Bertram's leg.
I think, was it on that drive where they settled for... No, it wasn't that drive. But prior to that, you and I were doing the math going back to the beginning of this season. At one point in the red zone... Mm-hmm. The Badgers had scored an 18 or 19 consecutive drive. Like, every time.
They've yet to go without a score in a red zone
possession. Either a touchdown or a field goal.
And they did it again today. And even if they were on the edge of it where...
Yeah, they were 6 for 6.
Vacos had to kick a 48-yarder, which would have meant that they were right there on the 21. So in the red zone, then backed out a little bit due to penalty, makes a 48-yarder. And boom. I mean, the Badgers have been efficient where they need to be efficient, which is they haven't turned the ball over much this season. They had one turnover tonight, and that was an interception that, you know what, I'll give credit where credit's due. It was ripped out of DK's hands by Alessandro, the defender for Purdue. Other than that, clean sheet, no turnover. We'll go back and say against Georgia Southern, no turnovers then. You go the week before, the fumble by Malusi. Reality is it was called a fumble, but may not have been a fumble. There were interceptions, but this team has not turned it over that much. They take care of business when they get in the red zone, and albeit they give up yardage, they aren't really breaking. They're bending very far. I mean, Georgia Southern, they gave up nearly 400 passing yards, but not much break. So, a lot of change, you talked about it earlier, where these defenders are adjusting to a new scheme, and these players are used to playing in a traditional defense, and now it's kind of a zone blitz, 3-3-5 disguise-type defense, and so the defense is still learning. We talk
and
a lot
the talent
about the
level
offense.
Is not where it has been in years past.
And that's the question, right? And we were talking about it tonight. We're talking about recruiting. We were talking about there being a hole in the recruiting.
And this is where
this is where
things get exposed a little bit. We're talking about the red zone stuff. Going into the game tonight, the Badgers had scored on all 12 red zone possessions, 9 tutties and 3 field goals.
Yeah,
6 for 6 tonight. So 18 trips into the red zone this season, they've come out with points every time. Every time. And tonight, they tally 38 of them. Purdue only 17. And the Badgers win tonight in their Big Ten opener. Time of possession, just looking at a few other stats. Badgers 33 minutes and 54 compared to 26:06. The big one tonight, though, again, unfortunately, is penalties. Mm-hmm. Badgers flagged 11 times for 70 yards. Purdue, equally big, not as many, but more yards. 77 times for 73 yards. When I think back in this game, Purdue's penalties came at such bad times for them.
And we were talking about it. We were saying, hey, no penalty is opportune, right? They're all not great, and they're all coming at times, and it's not helpful. But inopportune penalties really hurt. The Badgers had 6 false starts. So you take that and you say, okay, that's a 5-yard penalty, and it's a false start, and that's probably the most easy penalty to get rid of. You just get rid of the penalty by not jumping before the snap. But false starts versus holding, right? You saw 2 big plays early in this game for Purdue get called back because of a holding. And that's a backbreaker. And you say to yourself, well, they still get another shot at that down again. But it just strips you emotionally to see something happen and then have to walk it back because, you know, big number 70, whatever, just grabbed the inside of the shoulder pad when you really didn't have to.
Well, I mean, and they, you know, it goes on both sides of the ball tonight, talking about penalties and inopportune times. You look in the second half, the Badgers get a break from Purdue on a kickoff. DK goes 39 yards on the return.
Yep.
Purdue's flagged 15 for personal foul. And then a couple of snaps later, on a second, Jack Nelson is called for offsides. So now it's a 3rd and 14 incomplete. You have to settle. And give Vacos credit, man. Kid is just nailing it tonight. 48-yard field goal that puts you up 30-17. But as we lamented at the time, I said to you, man, that's where you can put them away.
Yeah.
And that's where those mental mistakes.
And I'll give you this. That third down was an incomplete pass after the false start.
Right.
Now got stuffed. And it could have been picked. And
It
went right through the defender's hand. So, I mean, you almost see the pendulum swing 100% the other direction. Because if that's taken by Purdue, that's still a at that point, would have been a 10-point game, a 27-17-point advantage, a 10-point advantage for the Wisconsin Badgers. And Purdue with the ball, coming off of a possession where they had just gotten a touchdown. You just got to count your blessings, and that was number one right there for the Badgers tonight, is that they didn't throw that ball to the other team.
Well, true. I think two things out of that, though. You made something out of nothing where you got the 48-yard field goal, and then you kick it out of bounds on special teams.
Yeah.
But Ricardo Holman gets the pick, 28 yards, and again, then Purdue got a pick, but again, that second half, change of momentum, shifting, little things mean a lot. And the Badgers had more little things go their way in the end. They win this game 38-17. As a team, the Badgers put up 402 total yards. We talked about Tanner Mordecai through the air tonight, 17 of 27. Did not have a touchdown, threw for 174. We were waiting for the C.J. Williams coming out party. Mm-hmm. It happened tonight. Five catches, 56 yards. Let's go.
Here's your forecast from locally grown radio WFHR. Cloudy skies expected overnight with isolated thunderstorms likely. Lows level off around 59. Southeast winds 8 to 15 miles per hour. Cloudy skies tomorrow. Isolated thunderstorms likely. High temperatures reach up to 78. Cloudy skies again tomorrow night. Lows dip down to about 56. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Jennifer Wojcicki. Currently, it's 71.
Jacob joins us now, author, former Chicago Tribune editor as well. And Mark, I have to start by letting it be known that I finally went down the rabbit hole to figure out why, as I type up my show notes every week, why does it keep trying to autocorrect your name, Mark Jacob, to Mark M-A-R-C? I figured had to be somebody. Mm-hmm. I finally figured out it's Mark Jacobs is a fashion company.
Oh, yes. Yes, clerks in stores always point that out to me.
Do they really?
You know, if you had a C instead of a K and you had an S at the end of your name, you'd be rich. Yeah. It might take more than that, but, you know.
Yeah. So I'm seeing all kinds of purses and fragrances.
Yep. Not me.
Not you. And I have tried. I have tried to get my Google Docs to stop correcting that, but it just keeps wanting to spell it that way. So if you ever see it misspelled, that's why. I got owned by autocorrect, I guess, for lack of a better thing. You have a column in Courier Newsroom, and you know it's a premise we've discussed plenty of times here, but you put it in column form this time. So if folks go to couriernewsroom.com, they'll see the headline, "A New Idea in Political Interviews, Ban the Liars." And it's based, and I know I'm not the only one who's saying this. I've heard this from many people. There was nobody that had anything against Kristen Welker, or maybe even NBC for that matter. You know, I go plus minus on that. But her decision and NBC's decision to book Trump the way they did on Meet the Press is part of what really spurred this column, right?
Yeah, I mean, they keep on doing the same thing. And people like me have for a long time said, don't want they ever learn, you know, because when you put somebody, you know, a guy who lies all the time on television, you can't correct the lies as fast as he can utter them. So you're always going to be, you know, in a deficit position with him getting some lies past that you didn't confront. And obviously that's the case here. It's, you know, this fire hose of falsehood kind of thing that people once accused the Soviet Union of doing that, of just a fire hose of falsehood. And that's what, you know, Trump is doing too. But but the problem with this, Pat, is that this was taped. You know, they taped this and they edited it, and they still left in, you know, outrageous stuff, you know, about how Nancy Pelosi is responsible for January 6th and other complete garbage that's been fact-checked, you know, a million times.
And so, I think that was a kind of a larger point in this is that, yeah, they did know they were taping it, and so it's like you learned part of the lesson of don't go live, but how did you miss the next part of if you're going to put on lies, you can't put the correction like 20 minutes later or just in an online situation?
There are two ways they could do it. They could actually do enough homework to where they were prepped and ready to confront him live, which they did on a couple of things, but very rarely.
But you can't. He just talks right over that.
Right. Well, all right. But you can do. You can try to do that and say no. This is wrong. And you can, you know, you can out try to out talk him, which you know a lot of people have tried to do and failed. Mm-hmm. But you can try that, and you can, you know, you confirm no. That was a lie. Now, if you do that, there's always a risk that he gets fed up and walks off stage, and then for NBC has no product to push. You know, right. so they have to be fairly gentle with the pushback. The other way you can do it is just let him talk. But then when you broadcast it, stop it every time he says something that's a lie. Stop it and say, no, our panel of experts found that. You know, do that. Just do that over and over again. Now, you'd be doing it a lot because he lies a lot. But that, at least you wouldn't be helping a newsmaker lie to your audience. That's because that's what they're doing. They're, you know, and that's not, is that a public service? Who does that serve, the liars or the audience? The answer is the liars.
Right. I mean, it really is. It is a more of a community service to stop the tape every time because yeah. that, I mean, you and I have both been editors. That's just basic editing. Is mm-hmm. you stop and you don't let the mistake, you know, carry on. You annotate it, you know, right then and there.
Don't you think there's some mentality that, well, we'll just put them on the air. That's a, you know, they can just
say. Well, that's the platform excuse where they say, hey, we're just yeah. the platform. You know, you listen to it all and then you decide. We'll tell you later on, but we're just, you know, we don't want to interfere. It's right. like there's nothing interfering about interrupting a lie and making sure the audience knows the truth.
Yeah, as you pointed out, you know, that 20 minutes later, they're like saying, well, that thing that Trump said 20 minutes ago wasn't true. Well, then the lie worked because, you know, half your audience is left already and they heard the lie, but now your correction.
Yeah, yep, that's exactly it. There are several headlines this week in media circles about Rupert Murdoch and his reign at Fox News being over, but the damage he did may last forever. And I try to follow media. I actually did not know Rupert Murdoch was still calling the shots. I thought he'd handed things over or died. I suppose that was Roger Ailes, but I just was not even right. aware he was still a thing, to be honest.
Oh, yeah. He only thinks he's a thing. I mean, they even had correspondence from him in that the lawsuit that Fox recently had to settle for $750 million. Mm-hmm. You know, there were communications from him, so he was involved in that. Now, he's handing it over to his son, who is at least as right-wing as he is. And so I wouldn't expect big changes unless the other members of the family decide, hey, now would be a good time to sell or something like that. So the company may be in flux, but it's, you know, it's not going to come back to reality. And let's not remember, this is not a news channel. This is an anti-news channel. This is a news channel that lies and hides stuff. You know, the whole scandal with Lauren Boebert doing her thing at that that theater in Denver, you didn't hear that on Fox News. They didn't report on it.
No,
they decided that was not. They decided that was not news.
Yeah,
that a member of Congress had been kicked out of a theater for extremely inappropriate and rude behavior.
Yeah, but again, when it's all about the team. If the person on the team is right. misbehaving, well, right. then it's something I guess you have to defend rather than as we've said, we're going to say it again. If Hunter Biden did something wrong, he should be prosecuted.
Definitely.
You know? Yep. That's just how it works.
You know, but with the Fox thing, you know, they repeated the Trump lie about Nancy Pelosi being the cause of January 6th. I mean, they you know that she refused to bring in the troops. Well, number one, it wasn't her authority. Number two, she didn't. She's the one you see on video calling for help when Donald Trump was sitting in the White House and doing nothing. So it's just a complete lie. Fox knows it's a lie. Trump says it on NBC, and Fox does a big headline on it, you know, for days afterward. Mm-hmm. That's the way it works. It's platforming the liars, and so Fox isn't going to get better, Pat. Fox is one of the worst things that's ever happened to modern society.
Oh,
Fox,
yeah.
Fox has made millions ignorant. It's probably killed millions or killed hundreds of thousands because of the anti-vax stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they're responsible for spreading the lies that caused January 6th. They're a pox on society. They are a terrible thing.
There's no place where Rupert Murdoch has set up shop where, you know, democracy is better off or the media is better served. You simply cannot say that about any place where he has operated. Let's move over to the autoworker strike just briefly, because it was a little lesson that I had to I guess, give myself this week. When we talk about strikes, and people are always, they fall into old habits. And so Sean Fain, for example, is referred to as a union boss, mm-hmm. where you don't hear that word anyplace else except that anti-union connotation that comes with it. And the one that I did in writing was I started writing the line, you know, if the strike continues, both sides will experience significant pain that'll ripple through the economy. And then I realized, well, that's putting all the onus on the strike. You know, if the strike continues, you could just as easily say, and what I wrote in here was, if the automakers won't come to terms with their workers, both sides will experience significant pain. Right. And, you know, that's one of those instances where, for all the times I rail against both sidesism, you have to try to be more balanced because the vernacular, it tends to be one-sided.
Right. And there's this tone that, you know, the workers are asking for something that they don't deserve or mm-hmm. that they don't have now. Well, this is, you know, supposed to be free enterprise. It's supposed to be capitalism. And if it's capitalism, then the workers get to negotiate the terms of working for their employers. And, you know, that's called freedom. And we ought to celebrate it. And it yeah. shouldn't be this thing where, oh, no, that union's causing all this trouble. No, you might as easily say that the company's causing all this trouble by not giving its workers fair wages.
Yeah, exactly. We've watched CEO pay jump, you know, 40% over the past right. decade. Workers have not. And unfortunately, again, because of the self-imposed, in many cases, finite nature of a news story, you don't hear the part about how, you know, workers had to give concessions as well back during the Great Recession, and by and large, never got that back. And this is part of what that's about, is they think it's time for the make good that the CEOs have clearly received.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a lot of posturing going on now. You know, you see the Republican candidates, several of them, Tim Scott and Nikki Haley, for example, are saying very anti-union things. So, I mean, they just really want to bash the unions. Frankly, Donald Trump is not, and that shows that he's a, you know, better politician than those people are. Unfortunately, he's a better politician, but he's like trying to find this middle path. The last presidential election, 4 out of 10 union households voted Republican, and that's worth paying attention to, because if the Democrats need to bring that number down if they want to have success.
And that's why you see Donald Trump saying he's going to skip the next debate next week in California, and he will instead go to Michigan and, I guess, talk to, I'm going to imagine it's a, kind of a hand-picked a group right. of supporters, and claim that, you know, union people love him and want him, but there's no evidence that he'd be anything than, you know, as anti-union as ever. And that will be a ginned up crowd, but it saves him the embarrassment of having to perform up on stage.
Right, right. No, he doesn't get confronted by anyone. And, you know, and but people need to look at his record. You know, think about when you've been president before, you have a record for how you handle labor things. And Donald Trump was extremely anti-union in who he picked for labor secretary and all the policies. So you can't, I mean, those are the facts. And that this is why it's so important for, if the mainstream media is not going to get out the facts, then the other side's got to get out the facts, because the facts have got to be gotten out. Because in this case, Trump is not, you know, he can have a photo op with some union people. Sure, he can find those people. But he's anti-union, and the union people need to figure that out.
All right. The last thing is the potential for a government shutdown. And I guess I can ask your thoughts on how poorly things have gone for Kevin McCarthy this week. But let me also add this wrinkle, if you care to address it. I'm going to be gone the next two Fridays. And so when you and I get together again, which will be a Friday, the 13th, actually, of October, will we be in a shutdown when we look back at the time when we weren't able to visit here? Any thoughts on what things are going to look like 3 weeks from now?
I think there may be a shutdown. It won't be long, I don't think, because, I mean, although, you know, with the idiots in Congress, you never know. I mean, Tommy Tuberville's still doing his thing, and with widespread condemnation. So maybe it's not possible to shame Republicans. Maybe they just, you know, do what they want to do, and there's, you know, nobody will stop them. But I have a feeling that it's going to look so bad for them. I mean, the history is there. There was that great quote this week where someone said, some Republican said, well, you know, whenever we shut down the government, we get blamed for the government being shut down, you know, which is just hilarious. You know, yeah, you do, because you shut down the government. And so they're going to take a hit, just like Gingrich did in the 90s. And you know, a fairly quick order, I suspect, if they do go to a shutdown, they'll fix it when everyone gets embarrassed enough. But it's just a terrible way to run a government. Look, you look at a Republican government, you know, stewardship of our government, and it's just a clown show. They don't know how to do things. They don't want to do things. They couldn't pass infrastructure in 4 years, Pat. Mm-hmm. They don't want to get anything done. All they want to do is get on TV and be loud and obnoxious and, you know, blow up cars on TV commercials.
and loud and obnoxious they were, which is why we this morning have decided not even to go to the hearing this week with Attorney General Merrick Garland, because again, clown show was just the best way to describe it, rather than getting some actual work done. Mark Jacob, thanks so much. Looking forward to visiting and catching up after a little break here. Have a good weekend.
All right, you too.
All right. When we come back, we'll talk to Dan Schumacher up in Ashland, find out what's happening at the tippy top of the state. We'll talk a little bit about the wild card race in baseball, since it appears the Brewers are going to be sewing up the division crown here. And we'll talk a little Packers football and see how this poor suffering Bears fan up in Ashland is doing right after this. You're up north.
Stop surfing the dial. You've found the greatest radio station ever. Locally grown radio, 97.5 FM and WFHR, 1320 AM.
I know it's a little cliche that I would play, Touch of Grey rather than something more obscure by the Grateful Dead when Dan Schumacher joins us, but we mentioned it earlier this week as well, that it was this week in 1987 that Touch of Grey reached number 9 on the Hot 100 chart, which was the band's only recording to ever reach the top 40 on the Hot 100. And I remember Dan hearing it back then and thinking, this is a nice little sound. I wonder if this is what the future is going to be like. But it was very much a one and done in terms of a pop sound from them, right?
Correct.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Kind of went back to their roots, which, again, had a touch of gray, if you will, at the time.
If you can believe that they actually wrote that song and started to figure out the melodies to it in 1981.
See, that there's two kinds of songs. There's the ones that take years to come together, and then there's always the one like, I wrote it on the back of a cocktail napkin in 5 minutes. You know, and there's plenty of songs that have that kind of a story, too.
Right,
you know?
Right. They rewrote the song a bunch of different times, a couple of different verses. There's a story behind it, yeah. Robert Hunter and Jerry Garcia.
They made a lot of money on tour. But I have to think that even putting one record in the top 10 probably added to the coffers a little bit.
Oh, I think it did. But it also, that's when everything started to get out of hand. Mm-hmm. That there was kids that never heard of the Grateful Dead before, hear that song on the radio. They want to go check out the concert, and it turns into, if you watch the documentary on it, it talks about the fact that there was more people in the parking lot that were in than in the show. That it was a traveling circus, like you wouldn't believe that it turned into. And it was a part like Dennis McNally, the publicist, says, it was a party that no 19-year-old would ever turn away.
No, that's great. What's going to happen with your Cubs here? The Brewers are going to clinch the division as early as tonight if the Cubs lose this afternoon and the Brewers win in Miami. But at some point here over the weekend, the Brewers are going to clinch the division. I'm looking at the wild card race right now, and the Cubs are currently tied with Miami for the top spot, or for the third and final wild card slot, I should say. Philadelphia and Arizona have the other two. But between Arizona, Chicago, Miami, Cincinnati, and you could even throw in San Francisco because they're only three games back. I mean, this is still very much a wide open race for that last wild card slot. It's weird to think that, first off, your Cubs are going to be rooting for the Brewers this weekend to beat Miami a couple of times. And then there's going to be this regular season finale series next week that could be a tune-up for the Cubs and Brewers meeting in the playoffs.
Yeah.
If you make the playoffs.
Yeah, right. I'm kind of disappointed in the Cubs. I mean, to be at one time 2.5 games out from the Brewers, and now they're 8 games out. Mm-hmm. I mean, they really, really didn't do well down this stretch. And that's, I don't know if it's because it's a younger team. Brewers, I think, are really well coached. I don't know. It's going to be one heck of a tough road for the Cubs to even make that wild card, in my opinion.
I just think that the acquisitions at the trade deadline for the Brewers were just amazing. You had you've got Canna, you've had Donaldson, who was after the trade deadline, but he was acquired after the Yankees let him go. The rookies have really stepped up, and I'm not taking away anything from management for making some good choices. This just happens to be a year where both the rookies and the new additions really clicked. Unlike, say, the Mets and the Padres over the past couple of years, who put hundreds of millions of dollars into, buying a championship, and it just absolutely blew up in their faces. And in the Cubs' case, you didn't try to buy a playoff, but you... Yep. You just didn't have everybody click.
Yeah, I thought that there was going to be a – when they brought that kid up from AAA, their top prospect, and play center field, mm-hmm. and he had that lights out, great first game, but he hasn't done much since then. I don't know, he's come back to earth.
Yep. The folks watching the video feed of our show can only appreciate that Dan's having to go through what I go through in the afternoons when the wind picks up. Yeah. And Dan is this close to being a ghost just because the way the curtains are blowing. I've had to do interviews like that, too, where I'm just pushing the curtain away because I can't stop to actually close the window. But you don't want to turn down the fresh air either, because it's going to be, 10 below here before you know it.
Yeah, it's a beautiful morning. It's very foggy up here, but there's a nice breeze coming off the water, and I'm about 100 yards from Lake Superior, so it does have a nice breeze to it.
Bayfield Apple Festival is coming up before too much longer there. I think the following weekend. Are you have you ever been up for that?
No, I have not. I have not been up there for that.
Well, I don't know if you're around, but you got to go. That's
I wish I was. I have to go to Chicago next weekend to see my dear mother, who's a little bit of failing health, so I have to go home and see her for a little while. No, I do have a trip booked for mid-October into Bayfield and staying at a bed and breakfast for a couple of days.
So that'll work.
Yeah, it'll be nice in Bayfield. But speaking of bees, my Bears are brutal. Brutal with the capital B.
Oh gosh, it's just what do you got this weekend? Who do you?
I don't think the Bears are going to win. I think Minnesota's due.
Okay.
Minnesota's due. They're due to put one together for themselves.
I think now that we saw the way the Packers were clearly motivated for the Chicago game, and again, they're not like a Super Bowl caliber team, so their late loss in Atlanta was not, a huge surprise. It was disappointing, but not a huge surprise. But it does leave you to the point of you don't know exactly which Packer team will show up on Sunday. Yeah,
right. I agree with you on that. I thought Love still played well last week.
He did. Yeah.
I thought he did. I think that question has been answered.
The missed tackles, really killed us.
Yep. Defense didn't do very well to hold up at the end.
Okay, so now I have to ask from a coaching standpoint. Everybody makes the joke about, the next day if you don't do well, you're running laps. Okay. Somebody misses a lot of tackles. Is it like, are there all kinds of extra tackling drills on that, Monday or Tuesday, or is it like more strategic, film and chalkboard type of stuff?
I think I know for a fact at that level, they're not going to be punitive like that, where they do in high school or grammar school, where you go out there and work on the tackling dummy on form and everything like that. No, they go right to the film room and see what they did wrong. Mm-hmm. It's more of a mental game at that point. When they do miss tackles, 9 times out of 10, they miss a tackle because their head's down instead of their head being up, knowing where they're going. And that seems to be a norm in pro, even in the high level of college ball. Mm-hmm. The fundamentals kind of go to the side. They're ready for the big hit. They want the big hit. They're not wrapping up the legs. And you lose
track of the fundamentals. Yeah, that's exactly it. All right, Dan, well, enjoy the weekend. We'll talk to you a little later on.
It's homecoming up here.
There
it's
you
homecoming.
Go. Yes. Big reunion. Have yep. a great time. You're going to make a lot of new friends up there. That'll do it for us. Coming up next, Earl Ingram in Waukesha, Green Bay and Racine, Stu Daniels in the Chippewa Valley, La Crosse, Hayward and Oshkosh, Chad Holmes in Wausau, Stephanie Miller in Madison, James Jay and the gang in Wisconsin Rapids, and they are all followed by Kristen Bry and As Goes Wisconsin, then the new news, Town Call, and Todd Alba. So much that you can keep track of across the Civic Media Radio Network, and you can track us over at upnorthnewswi.com. Look for Up North
News. WFHR, Wisconsin Rapids, 1320 AM and W248 DE, broadcasting at 97.5 FM.